Cool.
Take it away.
Cool. Howdy, y'all. I'm Danielle. It's nice to see you. Nice to meet you. And I'm super excited to talk to you about open neuroscience. And I'm really glad there's a lot of people here. I did not expect everybody to come because I know this is a developers conference. So I'm going to tell you first why you should care about open neuroscience. First point is that we all have brains, right? Any time I mention neuroscience, everybody gets really excited because we do have brains, and that is essentially what we are, the integration between our brain and our body. But the issue is oftentimes our brains don't work the way we'd like them to, right? Raise your hand if you or somebody you know has ever struggled with mental health, neurological, or psychiatric conditions. Right. Everybody's crazy and sad. And this is not unique, right? Neurological and neuropsychiatric conditions are one of the greatest contributions to the global disease burdens, right? If we think about the fact that 28% of the global disease burden is neurological and neuropsychiatric, that's including communicable diseases, which spread like wildfire. We all had COVID. And so we understand the importance of better neuroscience means better health. But more than that, why am I presenting this to you? You may get that implicitly, but I also think there is a long and storied history of neuroscience and computing. And so we have been learning from each other and influencing one another since the inception of our fields. And to exemplify this, I have two people up there. Everybody probably knows who John von Neumann is, hooray. But Raphael Lorente Denault was a very close collaborator with John von Neumann, and he was a colleague of Ramon y Cajal. Out of curiosity, how many of you here do any form of neuro stuff? More than I thought! And so, you will know Ramon y Cajal is the one who is responsible for any time you've seen a picture of a neuron, and it's in black and white, probably him. And so, not only were they delving into the structure of neurons to understand how they functioned, this was seminal to the work of computing for how do we communicate information. And so you have interactions between Raphael Lorente Denault, who is understanding how electricity communicates information through the structure of neurons, with John von Neumann coming together at these conferences on complex systems and biosciences. And this continuing trend of neuroscience and computers have continued to influence them, right? Fast forward a little bit, you get Frank Rosenblatt and the perceptron, right? Based on neural networks, literally how neurons communicate with one another. And so here we are today. But not only have they continued to learn from each other since the inception of our fields, now in our kind of open neuroscience focus, we continue to learn from computing science how we can make neuroscience more applicable. And so we've all talked about the reproducibility crisis. I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but we can say that having open source technology, sharing your code, sharing data, and other techniques that I'll talk to you about today are ways that we can improve the quality of neuroscience and therefore hopefully improve the quality of health for all of us. But another reason, some of you in this room may be academics. I hope some of you are academics. And if there is anything that funders are starting to like, it is the fact that you may have open source technology or that your work may be reproducible and shareable, and not just because you have pretty figures, but the fact that funders themselves are realizing that open neuroscience is more robust, which means it's more often replicated, which means it's often more generalizable and holds true in ecologically valid and clinically translational applications. This means they get what they ask for with their investment back to them. And so I'm glad, personally, that funders care about open neuroscience because it then provides the means for researchers to do the extra time and effort that open practices often take. And we acknowledge that. I also think that open neuroscience helps facilitate a synergy between industry and academia. Oftentimes, industry has a ton of money, but they may be focused on research questions that are of interest to their stakeholders or profit shareholders, and maybe not so much time or interest for R&D. Academia is R&D. And so if there is a little bit more open neuroscience from industry and from academia, perhaps we can help each other with this. So when I talk about open research, I'm not just talking about academia. I'm talking to industry people as well. And finally, the principles I'll discuss in open neuroscience, a lot of them are transdisciplinary. There will be some fun neurospecific examples, which is why I hope you're here. But there are also many transdisciplinary principles. So I'm going to move through the different stages of a typical research experiment: data, pre-processing, analysis, dissemination. And for each one, I'll just talk about one or more aspects of open neuroscience, starting with the data we have. Specifically, the fact that I will first talk about the type of data that I mean, and I mean neuroimaging data. So we have a beautiful drawing of a brain here. That was published in 1643. Andreas Vesalius and De Humani Corporis De Fabrica. I'm sorry if you're Italian, I just butchered that. But but he was a visionary in terms of how to visualize the brain. He was the one who came up with taking this 3D structure that we have and slicing it thin sheet by thin sheet and drawing each sheet, and in doing so, sharing the visualization of how structures connected from top down, starting to give people a 3D visualization of brain function. Now that's really cool, but the issue is only the people who could do dissections, which were not very common, actually had a chance to interact with these structures themselves and see how these structures connected in 3D. And as we know in biology, structure often implicates function. But worse off is that the structures were dead. It doesn't, yes, they can tell you structure, but brains are so complex and filled with electricity and neurotransmitters and fluids. A dead brain is a very poor representation of the complex emergent phenomena of this dynamical pink walnut that we all share. So this is where neuroimaging comes in. And this is the kind of shit that I do. This is the kind of stuff that I do. And so, it's late. And so these are the ways that I prefer to visualize the brain. I take the brain, I break it up into a bunch of regions, like in the top left-hand side. And then the GIF just to the right of that, all those regions, you see how they connect over time. The brighter the color means two brain regions. I should have labeled them, but in this case, it was 0 to 110 brain regions. I would use a different atlas now. We all improve. And the lighter the color between the two means the increased mutual information between them. And every frame in that is every couple of seconds. And so this is a person playing a cognitive task. It's a bit of a memory game. And we